I'm Rod Serling. You're listening to The Zero Hour. Rest your eyes. Exercise your imagination. This week, Charles Larson's inside story of television murder. Someone's death. Starring George Kennedy. Joyce Boulafont. And Robert Reed. In Elliot Lewis's production of The Zero Hour.
The Mutual Broadcasting System presents The Zero Hour. Sponsored in part by the makers of V8 Juice, the makers of Wrigley Chewing Gum and Beechnut Chewing Tobacco. This is The Zero Hour on Mutual Radio.
Just when we are safest, there's a sunset touch, a fancy from a flower bell, someone's death, a chorus ending from Euripides. Robert Browning on Men and Women. For television producer Nils Frederik Blixen, someone's death was prologue to a show unwritten. He cast himself in the hero's role. His youthful casting director, Joanna Redfern, his leading lady. But somebody is not following the script. A second someone's death has been written in. Nor is Joanna Redfern playing her part as she should. The heroine is not supposed to be found at the scene of the crime with blood on her hands. For Nils Frederik Blixen, life behind the camera was never this frustrating. But that's the difference between fiction and fact. And the fact remains. Someone's death was murder. Our story continues after this word.
I was in South Korea with the Peace Corps through the first rural health program in Korea. What a lot of us did was to go around and check to see if there was a TB patient in the house. A lot of these people had never, ever had any kind of medical attention at all. I remember one case. She was in pain. She was in real pain. And the doctor examined her and became very concerned. And he told us later that had she not come in, she would have died. I was very, very proud. Yeah, but you probably heard this, and you'll hear it again and again from volunteers. The volunteer himself gets more out of it than he actually gives to the people who's supposed to be helping.
Volunteer for the Peace Corps. The Peace Corps is one part of action. Action is doing something.
There is something you can do. Get into action.
One would have thought, seeing Heidi, that she'd fallen asleep over her book. She'd been struck twice in the face by a sharp instrument with a long blade, probably an axe. The murderer may have been splashed, probably had been. An examination would show traces of blood in the trap under the kitchen sink where he or she had washed. No one in the fourplex had heard a sound. The murder weapon was nowhere to be seen. I stood in the doorway and watched a police car drive red away, the face in the window blurred by rain. Sergeant Ames, I want Miss Redfern's attorney notified.
He has been. Did you know the child that was killed?
Child. Tragic, tragic child. My God. Her grandfather get home?
No, he didn't.
When did this happen?
We found her about 7:10. She hadn't been dead long.
I know.
Oh.
My secretary spoke to her.
Why don't you come back inside, Mr. Blitzen?
In Red's apartment, Detective Ames took a statement from a pale, perspiring Rene Ortiz, who protested he knew nothing. He'd come home with a severe headache, he'd taken 3 aspirins, and he'd been awakened by the police at 7.
I believe you have a roommate, Mr. Ortiz, a Mr. Leeds.
Oui. Bobby Leeds. Oui.
Where is Mr. Leeds now?
I am sorry. I cannot tell you. He is no longer living at my place. We had a little disagreement.
Where does he work?
No. Bobby does not work. He is a lily of the field. Occasionally, he acts. You might say he is a mimic, a female impressionist.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Ortiz. You may go. Oh, and send up the boy, Phil Waters, will you?
Oui.
Incidentally, Mr. Blixen, you said the little girl called your office tonight. At what time was that?
About 6:30, I should guess. I had looked at my watch at 6:25, and my secretary said Heidi had called a little before that, and then she phoned back about 6:30.
And you spoke to the child at that time?
My secretary spoke to her.
Your secretary's name and address, Mr. Blixen?
Miss Mary McGrath, 400 1/2 Willow Way, and that's in Glendale.
Would Miss McGrath be familiar with the little girl's voice?
Absolutely. They've spoken to each other many times.
On the telephone, hmm?
On and off the telephone.
There's no way she could be fooled, not even by a professional mimic like a female impersonator?
Well, my secretary certainly didn't say anything. It was Heidi's voice as far as she was concerned. And that's all I can go on. May I ask one question?
Certainly.
Do you have the murder weapon?
Nope.
Then why have you arrested Miss Redfern?
Well, Miss Redfern stated she arrived home at approximately 6:45. She said she noticed the Ellis door open slightly, called to Heidi, got no answer, and walked in. Now, we came along a few minutes later, heard someone cry out. Miss Redfern was standing over the body with blood on her hands.
Shriver picked me up the next morning to go see Red where they were holding her at the Sybil Brand facility for women.
Oh, in my opinion, Nils, it would have been better to concentrate on tying her to the Gladstone murder. Now they have to show a connection between Gladstone and Heidi, and I don't think they're going to be able to do that.
Is that your good news for the day?
Well, it's a try.
What are you dragging your heels about? Get her off the Gladstone murder. She bought a gun. Well, let him do a ballistics test on it.
Yes, Frederick, I'm afraid there's a bit of a hitch there.
What do you mean?
You see, the other day when your boss Todd had Red fired, she went home, got in her newly repaired car, drove down to the pier, and took the boat trip to Catalina.
And threw the gun overboard.
Yes, that's right. It's at the bottom of the ocean. Nobody will ever find it.
It looks like tomato juice.
It's B.A.
What you got there?
It's B.A.
Looks like tomato juice.
It's B.A.
Right, wow. It sure doesn't taste like tomato juice.
Mm-hmm. It tastes like B.A.
A great natural blend of baked garden vegetables.
B.A. cocktail vegetable juice.
B.A.
Carry it with you, bring it through the gum. The big fresh flavor, bring it through the gum. Carry it with you, bring it through the gum. The big fresh flavor, bring it through the gum. Carry the big fresh flavor wherever you go, whatever you do. It's the finest, famous flavor. That's great, creamy taste, delicious. It's bring it through the gum. Carry it with you, bring it through the gum. The big fresh flavor, bring it through the gum. Carry it with you, bring it through the gum. The big fresh flavor, bring it through the gum.
We'll return to our story in a moment.
Good old Harry. What a host. When Harry throws a party, nobody goes thirsty.
Here, let me freshen up that drink.
Good old Harry is such a great host. How come Bill and Jean had such a terrible fight?
I want to go home right now. I don't care. I want to go home right now.
How come Bob had a little trouble driving home? And how come everybody who felt so good last night feels so bad this morning? Maybe good old Harry is not such a great host after all. Maybe good old Harry is a pusher, a neighborhood pusher. Harry pushes alcohol. So if you serve alcohol, please, don't be a pusher. And if you're a guest, Don't let good old Harry or anyone else push you into drinking more than you want. A public service message from this station and the National Institute on Alcohol Abuse and Alcoholism.
When I saw Red come into the visiting room, she seemed to have grown smaller. Behind her, the police matron who brought her in stood and gazed like a cat at a remote distance. There was a glass wall between us, and Red's voice came to me through a phone.
Like my outfit?
How are they treating you? Do you need anything?
Could you send me the trades?
Oh, sure. They'll be lucky if Schreiber doesn't sue for false arrest before it's over.
Don't tell me you two hamburgers still think I'm innocent.
As the day is long.
There's never a Kleenex around when you want one. How's Leonard Ellis?
Leonard, I don't know.
The police tell me he's been hospitalized. They found him in some bar. Told him about Heidi, and he began to get severe chest pains.
The poor guy. All right, I'll check into it. Red, did you notice anything out of the ordinary before you went into Ellis' apartment last night?
Just the door was open.
Was that usual?
Well, it was never open. They were all burglar freaks. They hear them every night. There are enough locks and chains and bolts to outfit a dungeon. On every door.
Our time was up. The matron was approaching. I told Red I'd be back. She put her hand on the glass, palm flat, and I rested my palm on the other side against hers as though we were touching. I left the building. By the time I got back to the studio, I didn't think anything was worth too much. There was a strange secretary in my office. It took me a moment or two to remember that last night at the office, just before Jack and I had stepped out into the rain, Mary had told me she was flying out in the morning to Chicago to see her sick father. I smiled at the new secretary. She had the heat turned up and her coat over her shoulders, but none of it seemed to warm her in the least. I picked up all my messages from her desk, including one from Tibbetan Research. It read, "The threatening letter, the words were cut out of Star Eyes Comics, April 15th, 1972 issue. Good man, Tibbet." I spent the next 10 minutes on the phone. Good Samaritan Hospital to check on Leonard Ellis. Learned nothing, except that he was in intensive care. Hung up and got a call from Ames.
Vixen?
Yes.
I wanted to talk to your secretary, Mary McGrath, but I got somebody else. Thought I had the wrong office. Where is Miss McGrath?
In Chicago. Her father's sick, didn't I tell you?
No, you gave me her address in Glendale, but there's no one there.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was pretty shook up last night. I've got the number right here. Just a minute. 427-3099. I don't remember the area code.
I'll get it. Thanks.
I spent the day at my desk going over all of the scripts that were ready to shoot. It was 5 o'clock when I got another call from Sergeant Ames.
We called the number you gave us in Chicago for your secretary, Miss McGrath. She wasn't there.
Well, her father's very ill. She might have been at the hospital.
Nope. Called a couple of her friends as well. No sign of her. So we went to the airline at L.A. here. She never got on the plane. Hey, Mr. Blixen?
I'm here. I'm trying to find an explanation. She was very close to her father. She told me he was dying.
Passed away at noon, Chicago time. Well, I'd better notify missing persons.
I hung up and sat thinking about Mary and the two deaths that had already occurred. Mary? How could she be involved? Was I losing my sanity? Was there a straight line through Dan Gladstone, Heidi, Mary? Where would it end? And with whom?
My daddy was a mighty fine man. He taught me a thing or two.
A woman can hurt, so you stay on your guard and beat nuts the tobacco you chew.
Them times we'd go fishing, my daddy and me, he'd tell me everything you ever knew.
You'd go after Big Mouth in close to the bank and beat nuts the tobacco you chew. Around here, beach nuts the word for chewing tobacco. And it's been that way, father and son, for a long, long time. What's the secret? It's the way beach nut just keeps getting better. Like beach nuts, a lot moister these days, with more taste and less stems. big improvements. You ought to try today's beech nut chewing tobacco.
And now I'm a daddy with a son who's full grown, and I tell him a thing or two.
Steered money don't win, evil women drink gin, and beech nuts the tobacco you chew.
The Zero Hour continues after this.
Here's a tip from your Better Business Bureau. With more and more people eating poultry these days, it might be a good idea to review some basic facts on how to buy and serve poultry. First of all, remember to look for the grade shield. The highest quality is U.S. Grade A. Grade A birds are fully fleshed, meaty, and attractive in appearance. But when you bring it home, remember that all poultry is perishable. Care and cleanliness should be used in the preparation, cooking, and serving of all poultry products. Keep frozen poultry hard frozen until time to thaw, and cook it promptly after thawing. Use fresh chilled poultry within 1 to 2 days. Completely cook poultry at one time. Never partially cook, then store, and finish cooking at a later date. Leftover cooked poultry, broth, stuffing, and gravy should be separated, covered, and refrigerated. Then you'd better use it within 1 or 2 days. A consumer tip from your Better Business Bureau.
Jack was parked in his usual place waiting for me, reading the late edition of the Times and looking at the legs of starlets as they passed the checkout point at the gate.
Hi, Mr. Blixen. Hey, what do you hear from our girl?
I saw her this morning. She'll make it. Let the traffic clear a little bit, Jack. I just want to sit here for a minute.
You know, my wife, Dolores, she's got it all paid. She says they're railroading Miss Redfern, and she says the kid's grandfather did it.
What's she based that on?
Well, for one thing, the paper said there were 3 or 4 locks on the front door, and all of them were open. And Dolores figures the kid was waiting for whoever lived there to come in. The paper said she was on the couch, so she didn't open the door herself. The locks were off, and the guy came right in.
Unless he picked the locks first.
Why, you can't pick a lock without making some kind of noise.
Oh, but it was raining. That might have covered it.
Hey, what's the matter? Don't you want the old man to be guilty?
Something like that. Besides, he left the studio at the same time we did last night, 6:30 or thereabouts. He couldn't have gotten to the apartment, killed the girl, and split before Red arrived.
But when did she...
About 6:45.
Well, it'd be tight, but I think he could make it.
In 15 minutes?
I don't know. I'd have to run it myself.
Do it. Do it now. I want to go over there anyhow.
All right. You time it, but wait till I get out of the lot. Hey, I feel like Mario Andrade. Now, who's going to pay the fine if the cops stop me?
They'd better not stop you.
I hope you're right.
We crossed Santa Monica, turned right onto a congested alley, left the narrow street, and east again toward Vine. There were no automatic signals on Jack's route. At the boulevard stops, he paused and nosed at once into honking traffic. 12 minutes and 20 seconds later, we pulled to a stop in front of the fourplex.
Okay, how about that?
You're a professional driver, and you barely made it. Ellis was drunk. The streets were wet. No, I can't buy it. It's out of reason, all out of reason. Leonard Ellis was the only one in the whole house who couldn't have done it.
Except, of course, Miss Redfern, maybe?
Yeah, that's true. You better not wait, Jack. I want to pick up something from the garage, and no idea how long I'll be. I'll see you tomorrow.
Yeah, right.
On the walk, Boom Boom, wearing shapeless coveralls and a pith helmet, was using a small hand hoe to replant one of the rain-shattered rose bushes.
Ah, Neil Frederick. You see, Sherry, it is foolish to try to raise anything beautiful in this violent city. I loathe that little girl that Ivy, but she was part of the house, part of the fun. And now she's gone. Joanna's in jail. Poor Leonard is in the hospital. Bobby's left. Nothing is the same.
Bobby's left? Do you know where he's gone?
He called. He wanted to know about the funeral. He's living with another boy in La Cañada.
I want to ask you a favor. I understand Heidi kept a number of magazines, comic books, in the garage.
Oh, too many. I was going to call the trash man.
Well, before you do, I'd like to go through them, if I may.
Bon chance, chérie.
As I walked along the Ruth Buckle driveway, I could hear Phil practicing. He was home. I paused under the ground floor window to listen.
It's not bad, huh?
It was Boom Boom's husband, Fred, pushing through the screen's back door, coming down the warp steps with a glass of wine in each hand. He looked curiously clownish in wide, baggy pants, a gray undershirt, and loose carpet slippers. And that's how I pegged him, a quiet clown.
Compliments to the house, Mr. Blixen.
Thank you, Mr. Hayward. I didn't want either of you to go to any trouble.
It's Fred, and you're a guest. And guests are no trouble to Boom Boom. They're the breath of life. Drink it. She makes it.
That's very good.
Boom Boom says you want to look through the comic books in the garage, huh? Come on, I'll help you.
The garage was ramshackle and unfinished, built for the thinner, taller cars of the 20s. It wasn't true that the comic books were piled to the roof, but there must have literally been thousands. Stacked along both side walls and the rear, some loose, some tied in uneven bundles, some torn and old, some recent.
Which one you looking for?
Star Eyes, April 15th, 1972.
Star Eyes.
We tackled it from opposite sides, restacking as we went. Halfway through the first pile, I thought I heard footsteps outside. It sounded like someone paused outside the garage near the heavy raised door, perhaps to watch and listen. Fred, engrossed in the search, hadn't noticed. I swallowed the last of the wine and I drifted toward the entrance. I looked casually down the drive and into the rear yard and along the porch. There was no one there. And the guitar practicing had ceased.
I'm up to March. April 1st, 8th, April 15th. Here it is.
Good, good. Let me see it. Fred, you see these holes in the pages? Now, I say that Heidi cut the words out of this magazine for the threatening letter she sent to Red.
But the writer threatened to kill Dan Gladstone. I know Heidi was a weirdo, but she wouldn't have killed nobody.
She could drive. She could have been out of the house that night.
Mr. Blixen, if you tell the police all this, you know what they're going to think?
Know what?
Well, if Red figured out that Heidi killed her great love, and if she came out here and found the magazine and put two and two together like you just did, couldn't the police say that was enough motive for her to kill Heidi?
Fred Hayward wasn't the clown. I was. There was no answer I could give him. I just walked away. At 4:30 in the morning, I gave up the idea of sleep and I stepped onto my balcony to wait for sunrise. At 8:30, I was in Walter Tibbetts' office in research, seated at the chrome desk under the cobwebs, comparing my mutilated copy of Star Eyes with the whole one that he had.
So, what do you expect to accomplish with this thing now that I, run it down for you?
I'm not sure. I was playing detective. I hoped that I'd be able to help my casting director.
You mean that nice kid they arrested it? Joanna Redfern.
Yes.
Help her. How?
Oh, that's too complicated. Just believe me when I say it didn't work.
Wait a minute there. What was that?
What was what?
Let me see your copy.
Walter, what are you doing?
Pages 17 and 18 are missing from your copy.
And they weren't part of the original cutout?
No, because I showed you those parts. Peter Lorre and the Bug-Eyed Monsters. What does that mean? And page 18 as well, continuation of same story.
Oh, sure. They're a rock music group.
And stills of the real Peter Lorre on the back. You remember M?
Oh, yeah, beautiful. That was a gorgeous performance. Scared the hell out of me. It's been so long. Wasn't M a kidnapper?
No, a child molester. Most despicable criminal in Berlin. Remember, the police couldn't find him? Well, finally, the underworld took over. They captured him. Executed him, I think.
Yeah, they talk about the movie here, in your copy.
Well, what's the connection? This wasn't part of the threatening letter that you showed me.
No, unless there was another letter. Wait a minute.
There's some other places cut out.
Yeah, let me see it. I'll compare them. Write this down. Go to the $300 cash each and every month for life. I will pay or. That's O-A-R.
O-A-R.
O-A-R. Police. That's it.
Well, no, wait, that's plain enough. Pay $300 cash each and every month for life, or I will go to the police.
You want to know something? A person could get killed sending letters like that.
A person did. I walked back to my office in a daze. My substitute secretary hadn't come in yet, but my phone was ringing. Blixen here.
Ames. I called your apartment. You left early.
What is it, Sergeant?
We found your secretary, Mary McGrath.
The bullet fired at close range had entered her left eye near the nose, shattered the back of the skull, and spent itself inches short of the kitchen drain board. The brackish odor of death permeated the small house from end to end. According to the deputy coroner, she had been dead for approximately 40 hours.
You are listening to Mutual's presentation of The Zero Hour. Your Heart Association presents Stiller and Mira.
Honey, I'm going to test you.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you have high blood pressure, what are the things you should do?
Watch your weight.
Right.
Follow your doctor's instructions on smoking.
Yeah.
Take your medicine.
Good.
Get plenty of rest.
Terrific. Hey, honey, let's stay home tonight, huh?
And exercise, but don't overdo it.
Right. We'll stay home tonight, okay? Okay?
Yeah, and you got to rest before you get tired, right?
Exactly. So we'll stay home tonight, okay?
Okay, we'll stay home tonight.
Terrific.
Hey, wait a minute.
What?
You don't happen to have high blood pressure, do you?
Me? Of course not. I had my checkup at the doctor. I'm terrific. And I made an appointment for you.
Why?
Because I love you. And only your doctor can tell.
Another way to protect your loved ones is to give to the Heart Fund.
Young I may be, but still I'm a man. Just standing, even I'll do what I can to find me a place where I can be me. Get ready for life, be free as a sea.
The new Navy. You'll get your chance of success. Learn an exciting job and see the world. Call toll free 800-841-8000 or see your Navy recruiter. Be someone special in the new Navy.
Tomorrow at this time, rest your eyes and listen here to this week's continuing study in suspense. Someone's death. I'm Rod Serling, and this is The Zero Hour.
Today's episode brought to you in part by V8, Cures Wrigley Chewing Gum and Beats Nut Chewing Tobacco. This is The Zero Hour on Mutual Radio.
You have been listening to The Zero Hour, a presentation of the Mutual Broadcasting System in association with Hollywood Radio Theater. Heard every weekday at this time. Rod Serling is your host. Zero Hour is produced and directed by Elliot Lewis. The Hollywood Radio Theater theme was played by Ferranti and Teicher and is now available on United Artists Records and Tapes. Hugh Douglas speaking. Tune in tomorrow and once again,
rest your eyes and listen here
to The Zero Hour. is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
Serling, you're listening to the Zero Hour. Rest your eyes. Exercise your imagination. This week, Charles Larson's inside story of television murder. Someone's death. Starring George Kennedy, Joyce Boulafont, and Robert Reed. In Elliot Lewis's production of The Zero Hour.
Mutual Broadcasting System presents The Zero Hour. Sponsored in part by Quaker State Motor Oil and the Ford Motor Company. This is The Zero Hour on Mutual Radio.
This week, our story revolves around the make-believe world of television. We'll meet Nils Frederik Blixen, a middle-aged man married to his craft, producing television shows. He's preparing a new detective series called Stag at Bay, in which his star will have exactly 1/2 hour each week to solve a fictional crime. Nils Frederik Blixen, a veteran of the industry, is breaking in a new casting director, Joanna Redfern. Young, bright, aggressive. A woman more prideful of her liberated status than of her shocking red hair. Their problem is to cast the role of co-star in the upcoming series, strictly a matter of choice. It would have been easy if it hadn't been for one unexpected, intangible fact. Someone's death. The fact is, it was murder. Our story, Someone's Death, begins after this word.
I was in South Korea with Peace Corps through the first rural health program in Korea. What a lot of us did was to go around and check to see if there was a TB patient in the house. A lot of these people had never, ever had any kind of medical attention at all. I remember one case. She was in pain. She was in real pain. And the doctor examined her and became very concerned. And he told us later that had she not come in, she would have died. I was very, very proud. Yeah, but you probably heard this, and you'll hear it again and again from volunteers. The volunteer himself gets more out of it than he actually gives to the people who's supposed to be helping.
Volunteer for the Peace Corps. The Peace Corps is one part of action. Action is doing something.
There is something you can do. Get into action.
He lay on his stomach under the oak like a spy, with his hands shading his eyes and a reversed blue baseball cap spread over the back of his neck. He was black, tall, 6'5" in his stocking feet, a former basketball player. Several woodworms had been caught in the blood that matted the base of his skull. He'd been shot at close range, the bullet burrowing upward through the back of his head. He was quite thoroughly, vengefully murdered. At the precise early morning hour that a young boy and girl in the hills along Mulholland Drive above Hollywood stumbled onto the body, I was in a projection room at the studio. I was still at the studio in my office, chairing an unofficial production meeting as the sun dipped into the smog and below the Los Angeles horizon. It was the 22nd of May. On June the 4th, come hell, high water, death, panic, or war, we had to be in production on the first of 22 hour episodes of a new TV series which I had originated and would produce called Stag at Bay, a detective series which is supposed to make me some kind of authority on murder. The meeting was a replay of a thousand, just like it.
You know, we've got to find a gimmick to hang the PR campaign on.
Right now, that's less important than finding the right girl.
Across the desk from me was Leonard Ellis, a born conciliator. In his youth, he'd wanted to be a baseball umpire, but failed due to his slight deafness, though he often said it was merely compensation for 20/20 vision. He claimed to hear better after a nip, so at 61, he had become an alert quasi-alcoholic. Nevertheless, Leonard Ellis was the best unit publicist any series could have. Joanna Redfern, the casting director, sat near him, upright in straight chair. Tall, 23, a recent graduate of Bennington, she wore her red hair short because everybody else wore it long. She was uptight, tapping the arms of her chair, uncrossing her trousered legs. When she finally got to her feet, it was in sections, like a deck chair unfolding.
Well, someday some terribly courageous TV producer is going to thumb his nose at the computer, cast the best actor or actress in his series instead of the safest, and make $100 million. And how in the name of reason are those pious, rude New York network research freaks going to squeeze out of that one?
Well, I'm sure every producer wants to cast the best actor or actress in every role. Isn't that so, Niels Frederick?
I'm producing this series, and I'll make the decisions. I couldn't care less about what they want upstairs. And so you'll get it straight, Miss Redfern. I'm not going to fill an important running lead with a bad Mexican-American actress just because Justicia or Nosotras or the rest of the pressure groups think I ought to.
The part calls for a Mexican-American girl. It would be absurd not to get...
Fine. You bring me one who can cut the mustard and I'll sign her.
I have brought you several, but all you're after is a pretty face.
They weren't right, any of them.
You know what I think I better do? Is tell the front office that this isn't working out. That it isn't fair to the studio to saddle you with a casting director you don't know and you don't have confidence
in. Sit down.
No, I'd rather not.
Who's for coffee? Are you, Nils Friedrich?
All the same, Mr. Blixen, I wish you luck. I hope Skagit Bay knocks everybody right on their backside.
His backside.
Of course.
Is this your first series, Miss Redfern?
Yes.
It's my fifth. Joanna, isn't it?
It's Joanna, but everybody calls me Red.
Yours is black, I believe, Nils Frederick. Red, are you cream?
No sugar, dash of cream.
While Ellis translated the coffee order to my secretary, Mary, the poor woman should have been gone hours ago, Red sat on her tailbone with the player's directory and searched for the actress who wouldn't compromise us too much with the powers upstairs. I could hear Ellis on the extension talking to his granddaughter.
Hello, honey? Yeah. This is Grandpa. I'm going to be late again for dinner. Did you call me? Donnie Osmond? I thought you were in love with David Cassidy. Issue of... Which magazine? Oh. Anything with Donnie's picture on the cover. Yeah, I'll find one. I won't be too late. Bye-bye, sweet.
Donnie's woman?
Donnie needs her.
She assured me last spring that Bobby Sherman needed her.
Well, that's when she was a kid of 13. But now she knows what love is.
Red, where did you meet Ellis's granddaughter?
Oh, I've known Heidi for years. We're neighbors.
You're kidding. No one in Hollywood has neighbors.
Oh, Red and I live in the same... what do you call it, Red? Publix?
Over on De Long Pre. It's a nice area. I love it.
Yeah, they still dig their heels in about blacks, though.
In this enlightened day and age.
Yeah, you bet. In this day and age... I'm sorry, Red.
Why? Did I walk into something? Well, what happened at the neighborly fourplex?
Nothing happened.
Yeah, right. Nothing. That tempest in a teapot.
Come on, tell me. Might springboard a script.
No script. Just I had a black friend, somebody objected.
Anonymous letters, you know.
So what did you do about it, Red?
Kissed him goodnight on the lawn after that. Didn't want anybody to miss anything.
That's a good girl.
Oh, here she is. Now, just look at this picture if you want to see one sweet actress. Now, I know she won't do. You're after a beauty. This girl looks like 10 cents worth of cat meat.
Yeah. She's got an interesting face.
You mean ugly.
True.
You know Clifford Odette's Country Girl?
Of course I know it. Do you think I'm illiterate?
Well, how do you think the woman ought to be played?
Mother Earth.
Okay. I saw Isabel Chavez do Country Girl in Spanish in East L.A. a month ago, and I thought I'd die. This was a woman you could believe anything about. When the husband tells the director she was Miss Mexico, you believe. When he says she tried suicide, you believe that. You believe. Oh,
I watched her, Joanna Redfern, Miss Clumsy of the Year, knock over a 7-foot-tall philodendron plant. While Ellis and I helped her prop it up again, she was tossing the plant's upper tendrils over the automatic fire extinguisher pipes in the ceiling, which caused her to split her shirt and dislodge an abstract of some English soccer players when she fell in exhaustion against the wall. Yet, like the young Hepburn, she was so secure in her ungainliness that it projected itself as a kind of high-born grace. I felt I'd never been stuck with a more aggravating girl in my life.
I did all that in one take.
Will you sit down, Red? Forget the plant. Just sit down. I'm sorry. I shouldn't have shouted.
You certainly shouldn't have.
Ellis, see if Mary fell in the coffee pot out there and drowned, will you?
Yeah. Mary!
Oh, dear.
Oh, sorry. I didn't know you were right at the door about to knock. Here, let me help you.
Joanna.
Hmm? Oh, me, yeah? Oh, I guess I'm used to being called Red.
What is it, Mary?
Well, I hate to interrupt, but I've got a message for Joanna.
Who is it? Tell him to hold the line. We'll be through here in a minute.
Well, actually, they're right outside.
Look, Mary, if it's some agent...
They're not agents. Exactly.
Well, who are they exactly? Bill collectors, men from Mars, what?
No, they're policemen.
Policemen? This is a private eye show. Tell them we're not casting men in blue. Right, Nils Frederick?
You don't understand. They're...
Well, come on, Mary. They're what?
Detectives.
Detectives?
And they want to talk to me?
Yes.
What about?
They said it's something about... a murder.
There's a little town in western Pennsylvania called Oil City where they make peace of mind. They put it up in quart-sized green and white cans and ship millions of them all over the land to people who don't want to worry about their cars. This peace of mind for car owners is called Quaker State Motor Oil. The folks who make it are experts, men who really know motor oil. Because that's been Quaker State's specialty for over 50 years. Quaker State starts with the finest natural petroleum the earth provides. 100% pure Pennsylvania-grade crude oil. Then they put it through step after step of refining and fortify it to fight heat and rust and dirt and wear and give your engine the protection it needs. Quaker State Motor Oil. Who says you can't buy peace of mind?
Quaker State, your car. You keep it running, young. You keep it running.
We'll return to our story in a moment.
Marines are looking for a few good men to become Marine officers. A few good college men to accept the challenge of leadership. Men who will command Marine ground troops. Men who will fly Marine aircraft. And a few good men to serve as lawyers in the Marine Corps. The program is Platoon Leaders Class. PLC. No campus training. Ground and air options, available financial assistance, even free civilian flying lessons for qualified men. Talk to the Marine officer who visits your campus. Ask about PLC ground, PLC air, or PLC law. The Marines are looking for a few good men who want to lead other men as officers in the United States Marine Corps.
Two plainclothesmen were standing by Mary's files, a stocky, sunburned man in suede pants and a modified safari jacket, and a lean, dark man wearing a gray business suit. The second detective extended his wallet. I studied the ID, which bore a serious pose of him in a square collar, tie, and somewhat shorter haircut. The card said, Ames, Sergeant, Negro, male, 5'11", weight 160, black hair, brown eyes, no visible scars. There was a third man in the outer office, a cab driver, who sat flipping his hat between his hands and whistling at the floor, his elbows on his knees. Mary explained his presence.
He's been waiting for over half an hour. Miss Redfern, Joanna, ordered him.
Both men in red went through the open door into my office. As I turned to follow them, a messenger boy dropped off the rewrite of our opening show. The cabbie, I noticed, was leaning around me trying to read the cover.
You a TV producer?
That's what they call me. Mary, will you Xerox this, 15 copies?
Right now?
No, in the morning.
She's not in trouble, is she, Joanna?
Ellis, drive Mary out to the lot.
Don't worry, Red. All they can do is rubber hose you.
Stupid thing for Alice to have said to her. I liked Red. I could see Ames was quizzing her tough. Whether they resented it or not, I was going to go in. The cabbie was stretching his neck to try and see into the room. I closed the door.
The last time you saw him was...
Is this private?
It's up to the young lady.
They know about Daniel and me.
Daniel?
The black friend I mentioned... Dan Gladstone, apparently he's been in some kind of accident.
Oh?
2 weeks. You haven't seen Mr. Gladstone since roughly the 8th of May, then?
No, I haven't, or longer.
Why not?
I don't know what you mean.
You were fairly close friends, weren't you, Miss Redfern?
We were friends. I don't know how close.
Were you engaged?
No.
Didn't Gladstone give you a ring sometime in February?
It was a joke. It came out of a penny candy jar.
Excuse me. But what kind of accident was this?
He was shot in the back of the head.
Shot? Daniel, I...
And no accident.
Well, who told you about the ring?
What was the tenor of your last meeting, Miss Redfern?
The what?
What did you talk about?
I don't remember.
Did you fight?
I just really can't remember.
Did you say if you show your black face around here again, I'll cut your damn woolly head off, or words to that effect?
Now, wait a minute. Have you warned her? Given her rights, or did you just forget?
No, we didn't forget.
She has a right to know who you've been talking to, who's been telling you these...
Do you own a .22 caliber pistol, Miss Redfern?
Okay, that does it. Give me an outside line.
A pistol? No, of course not.
Red, cool it. I'm contacting a lawyer. You don't mind, do you, gentlemen?
No, I think it's a very sound idea.
I don't need a lawyer.
You might ask him to meet us at North Hollywood Division. It's 11480 Tierra. You have it there in a half hour, Mr. Blitzen.
Murder on television is one thing. It's an episode. By the end of the last reel, it's solved. But I was discovering that isn't the way it really is. My guts were turning.
Hello?
Wade?
Yes.
Wade, this is Nils Frederick.
Nils, what's the matter? You sound like you were canceled before you started.
Wade, we've got a problem here.
Oh, like what?
Like a suspect for murder.
The all-new Ford Mustang II has been named Car of the Year by Motor Trend Magazine.
Look what they've done to our Mustang. They named it Car.
Mustang 2, picked Car of the Year because it offers good gas economy. And in the words of Motor Trend, Mustang 2 is an outstanding concept of affordable luxury and prestige in a small package. And that makes it the right car at the right time.
When you take a ride, you're gonna know that Mustang's one of a kind.
Base sticker price for two-door hardtop is just $28.95, excluding dealer prep, destination charges, title, and taxes. At your local Ford dealer.
The Zero Hour continues after this.
This is Gene King for your Better Business Bureau. Don't expect your dry cleaner to work miracles. People expect them to pick out all the spots in a bundle of clothes and recognize the cause of each stain, including the invisible stains, which aren't apparent until the garment is cleaned. Keep in mind, too, that the dry cleaner's legal liability is frequently limited to the use of ordinary care in the handling of your merchandise. Remember that different classes of stains require different treatments, and some fabrics must be treated with special care. Special solvents must be used to get rid of gravy, lipstick, ink, nail polish, soup, etc. And if damage should occur through the fault of the cleaner, the value in dollars and cents is determined proportionately. So be fair with your cleaner and yourself. Tell him about those stains. Don't remove labels with dry cleaning instructions. And don't think of your cleaner as a magician. A tip from your Better Business Bureau.
The city by night had a warm, wind-swept face. Los Angeles was a Mediterranean town, I'd always felt, despite its size and location. All day long, it lay like a girl on its back by the sea, half asleep under its dark glasses burning in the sun, amused by the boys who whistled and hung around. Only at dusk it began to stir. It would blink and sit up and rest its chin on its knees, gazing at the bronze-colored ocean, and perhaps accept a margarita or two. The cab driver didn't need a margarita. He was very talkative.
Boy, looks like all the idiots are out tonight. Hey, look at that coot. Hey, there's a real dilly. You know, I tell you, I love this town. Too breezy back there for you?
No, it's fine.
Are you all right, Brad?
You haven't asked me whether I did it or not. Do you realize that?
I haven't. All right, did you shoot the man?
No.
That's a load off my mind.
Hey, did you see that jerk? A left turn and no signal. My wife wonders why I got a nervous stomach. Hey, you two want to buy a free press?
No, thanks. Would you mind... What is your name?
Jack. I thought I told you.
The young lady and I have some things to talk about.
Oh, sure. Private is private.
You think I'm not the murderous type, then?
If there is a type.
There's a type that goes all to pieces in a jealousy situation. The first person I was jealous of was my sister. I was 4 when she was born. I couldn't understand why my father had done that to me.
Don't you blame your mother, too?
She didn't count. She died when I was 8. She and my father were separated by then. He was living in Pennsylvania. She was in Hartford.
With you and your sister?
No. I'd already killed my sister.
You what?
I broke my sister's neck when she was 7 months old.
When you set out to make a point, you don't fool around.
It's the fact. My mother left the carriage on the front porch. I pushed it down the steps. I wasn't punished. Just sent to a child psychiatrist and later to a very nice school in New Hampshire. That's what jealousy can do. My father used to come see me once in a while. He's married twice since my mother died. 3 more children.
I thought you said you hadn't been punished. We rode along for a while, neither of us talking. Even the cab driver seemed more content since traffic had eased up some. I studied Red during the silence. She struck me as being very vulnerable.
Do you have any children?
No.
I know you're married. I looked up your studio biography.
Well, then it's out of date. We were divorced in 65.
Oh, let's see. I was born in 50, so I was 15 then. I'm sorry it didn't work out.
We made a mistake and we rectified it.
Very civilized.
My dear girl, a divorce is about as civilized as a gang rape. We've been married 18 years.
I think there must be something wrong with marriage.
Not with the game, just with the players.
Well, this must be the place.
Keep it running, Jack. We'll be going back into Hollywood.
Hey, I'll tell you what I'll do. Why don't I grab some of these and then I'll come back for you, huh? If you don't want to buy the cab. wait a minute. What is this, a check? I'm sorry, we don't take personal checks.
A voucher. I ride cabs a lot.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, thanks, Mr. Blixen.
Try us in about an hour.
Sure.
Niels Frederick, come over here. Wade Shriver, your client, Joanna Redfern.
How do you do?
Joanna? Miss?
Yes.
Let's talk out here for a minute. I think before we go inside, we'd better clarify a couple of points.
I didn't kill Dan.
Yes, I understand that. I don't believe they're ready to accuse you of it. They're just trying to get to the truth, believe it or not. They said he was shot with a .22. Yes, he was, and that's point number one. Joanna, do you own a .22?
No.
Ever own one?
No.
Well, were you ever in contact with one?
No.
Okay, I'll buy that. Second, where were you last evening between, say, 10 and midnight?
10, Grauman's Chinese.
You went to a movie?
Yes.
Wait, you act like a cop. Huh? Come on, Nils, wait a minute. Who did you go to the movie with?
Alone.
You often go to the movies alone?
Not often. I was just walking on Hollywood Boulevard. My car's in the shop. And I just went in.
Where was he killed, Wade? On the valley side of the hills. You know that area?
Not too well.
Well, there's a dead-end private street off Barry. It's called Ruby.
Oh, I know Ruby.
You would. Some kids found the corpse this morning by the side of the road. Dead about 12 hours. How do you know Ruby Avenue?
Oh, Lord.
Boy, come on. How do you know it?
Oh, we used to park up there.
You in Gladstone?
Once in a while.
Uh-huh. Had the body been dumped? No, his car was nearby. He was found about 20 feet from it. Hadn't been robbed, no sign of a struggle. So he knew his killer. He just strolled over under the trees, lowered his head, and somebody reached around and shot him.
What's the matter, Ed? You cold?
Just a chill. I'll get over it.
There seems to be a witness report on file here.
Witness to what?
Evidently, somebody heard you threaten Dan Gladstone.
Threaten him? That's ridiculous.
Joanna, did you two fight at all?
Well, I wouldn't say fight.
Well, what would you say?
Well, we had words.
What about?
But nothing important. Does it matter?
It matters. Now, please, Red. It must have been fairly important if it caused you two to break up.
He was a pusher, and he tried to get me hooked. I loved him, or I thought I loved him, but I told him to get lost.
Did you tell him, if you show your black face around here, I'll cut your head off?
Oh, God. Yes, I did.
Wade, what does this do to us?
Well, I don't know, Nils. Sure gives him a peach of a motive to swing on. Well, we better go in.
You are listening to Mutual's presentation of The Zero Hour.
When they change a plane flight, I check to see if another is just as good or better.
Fred Underwood, Kansas City postal worker, probably knows as much about airline schedules as the airlines.
I want to give that extra service that goes with airmail. So I move it just as fast as I can to get it out of here.
And airmail is moving. Now you can almost always get next day delivery to cities up to 600 miles away. And 2-day delivery anywhere in the country. Just mail by 4 p.m., use zip code, and mail from a specially marked airmail box.
When I started here, it was all propeller planes and trains. And back in the post office, mail was handled the same way it had been for years. Now there's jet planes and zip codes, and airmail's really going places.
Airmail and zip codes. They speed everybody's letters. If you don't know a zip code, check your phone book or call the post office. Help us help you. Use zip code.
Brothers and sisters, this is the game. Smoking at the nothing like a tree, keep climbing and a beautiful view. You just have to look around, you find a lot of gold. See what you've been missing if I all went up the phone. Smokey the bell, a growling and a sniffing in the air. He can find a fire dog before he starts to play. That's why we call him Smokey, that's how we got his name. Oh, come on, now beat it out, baby.
Tomorrow at this time, rest your eyes and listen here to this week's continuing study in suspense, someone's death. I'm Rod Serling, and this is The Zero Hour.
This episode brought to you in part by Quaker State and Four. This is The Zero Hour on Mutual Radio. You have been listening to The Zero Hour. a presentation of the Mutual Broadcasting System in association with Hollywood Radio Theater, heard every weekday at this time. Rod Serling is your host. Zero Hour is produced and directed by Elliot Lewis. The Hollywood Radio Theater theme was played by Ferranti and Teicher and is now available on United Artists Records and Tapes. Hugh Douglas speaking. Tune in tomorrow and once again,
rest your eyes and listen here
to the Zero Hour. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
From Hollywood, it's time now for Edmund O'Brien as...
Johnny Dollar.
This is Carl Bush, Johnny.
Yeah, Carl, what's new?
We've currently got a marine insurance headache down here. I don't know if you're interested, but your commission would be fat. I called you because I had a feeling you know Singapore. Is that right?
Yeah, I've been there on a case, and it'll have to be a fat commission to get me back there.
The policy is for $300,000. It covers the cargo that's being delayed out there, a time clause.
What reason do you have so far?
Mechanical trouble on the ship. One breakdown after another.
Accidental, sabotage, or both?
That's what we want to learn. Come on down after lunch and talk it over.
Edmund O'Brien in another adventure of the man with the action-packed expense account. America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to Tri-State Insurance Company, Hartford, Connecticut. The following is an accounting of expenditures during my investigation of the Yankee Pride matter. Expense account item one, $1.50, cab fare to your office.
Maritime insurance is a bad gamble at best, Dollar. Looks like we're on the short end of this one.
That I know about. I bet on Notre Dame last Saturday.
You aren't alone. This is a cargo of tin bound for a West Coast plant that's under government contract. Armament. Bearings, I think.
Hmm. Well, that's where that time clause you mentioned fits, huh?
Right. They got a deadline, so they insured themselves. The way it stands, if that ship doesn't leave Singapore in a week, we start losing 2% a day on 300,000.
You have an office in Singapore?
Yes, but we haven't gotten any satisfaction from them. I don't know. That far away, you're out of touch.
What's your man's name?
Here, name's Ells, Vincent Ells. Here's the address.
Well, I guess I can get the rest of the dope from him. I'll get out of here as soon as I can get space.
Good. It's nice seeing you, Johnny. Let me know when your plane leaves. I'll send you a bouquet of bourbon or something.
Expense account item two, $1,280, airfare and incidental expenses between Hartford and Singapore. In the perverse way of ship and airlines, we arrived with one of Malaya's heavy, muggy dawns, coasting in over haze-hidden native villages, the island-studded harbor, and finally settling on the big sea. I finished customs by 9, napped in my room at the Hotel Europe till 10, and I was in Tri-State's office by 1 p.m.
I'm happy to meet you, Mr. Dollar. Sit down. I trust you had a pleasant trip out.
Well, it's a little too long to be pleasant, Mr. Ells, but those airline people do everything they can.
Yes, you've been in the East before?
A few times. Now,
then you know that the unexpected is more or less commonplace here.
Say, what are you driving at?
It's possible that you've come on an extremely dangerous mission, sir.
Oh?
On the other hand, perhaps it's only coincidence. One of my adjusters has been killed.
He was working on this case?
Yes, I'm afraid he was.
What have you done about it?
I turned the matter over to the police.
Did you mention the situation, the delayed cargo?
I did, but I rather think that they categorized him as an individual rather than as an insurance adjuster.
Who was he?
A young Chinese, Ku Fo Soon, an intelligent chap. I discussed the matter with him the morning previous to his death. That was 2 days ago. And he told me he was going to visit the ship in question, the Yankee Pride. The men on board said he never arrived.
You don't think his death was a coincidence, do you?
Instinctively, no, but it's true. true that death isn't rare in some quarters here.
So I've heard. Did this boy of yours leave a family? Anyone I can talk to?
His parents were killed in the last unpleasantness, but there's a brother. They shared quarters.
I'd like to have the address.
Of course. It's in Den Coolen Street. Here you are. I won't bother directing you. Any rich old fellow will know where it is. But I believe he's employed by a Dutch concern. Wouldn't be at home till evening.
That'll work out. I want to go talk to the chief engineer of that ship first anyway.
Yes, I suppose you'll have to go. I only beg of you to proceed with great caution. The ship is down at the East Docks.
I'm in the sack. Come in.
Sorry to bother you, Chief. What's the matter with you?
Blasted fever. Seems like this climate brings it back.
Malaria?
Yes. What do you want aboard?
My name's Dollar. I was sent out here by the company that's insuring your cargo.
What about it?
Well, they're going to start losing money if this ship doesn't get started home in a few days.
Well, there's nothing they can do and nothing I can do. I have a bearing flown to me from Hong Kong. When that gets here, I can pump water into the boilers and not before.
What do you think about all this mechanical trouble you've been having?
What do you mean?
Well, has it all been legitimate, or could it have been sabotage?
Sabotage? Now, who'd do that?
I don't know.
Well, it hasn't been sabotage. Bearings go and generators foul up without any help. Ask me. I've been nursing them for 15 years.
When do you expect the stuff from Hong Kong?
It's hard to say. People don't work the same out here as they do in the States.
I'll fly up there myself after your bearing if it'll get you out of here on time.
Look, mister, I'm not in any shape to figure out anything now. I'm sick. I'll try and talk to the captain about it. Come back tomorrow. Will you?
Sure, Chief. I know. That fever's rough. After dinner that night, I rickshawed towards the address of the dead Chinese adjuster. I crossed over the Singapore River, which winds through the city to separate the native and European quarters, and entered Ben Coolen Street. It was jammed with its people outside to take advantage of the breath of coolness that comes with night.
Well, here's one.
Good. Which door?
I point.
Good.
You go some other place, point. I wait.
All right, you wait.
Here, General.
Are you Mr. Koo?
Who asked?
I'm an American. I want to talk to you about your brother.
I will not talk. Why do you come here?
Well, I'm working for the company where your brother works. I came all the way from America. Why won't you talk to me?
You speak the truth?
Yes, I have no reason to lie.
Your comrade. You heard in America about my brother?
No, but I'm here in Singapore to do the same job he was doing when he was killed. I wondered if there was some connection.
Connection?
Was he killed because of what he was doing or for some other reason?
I do not know. I did not know what he was doing.
Are you telling the truth?
Yes.
What are you afraid of? Why did you tell me you wouldn't talk about your brother?
I do not want to die.
Why would you die? Did someone tell you that you would if you talked about it?
Yes. I cannot tell anything because I know nothing. That he will not believe.
Who? Come on, you can trust me. I promise you I won't mention a word of this.
He who came here before the police. I told him that my brother and I speak of other things, not work. But he made promise that I die if I speak to police.
Who was this man? Did you know him?
No, I have never seen him.
Was he Oriental or Occidental?
English. He would do low work, I think. The work of frightening people for some other.
Yeah. And you're sure your brother didn't say anything about his work the night or day before he was killed, huh? Anything about a ship named the Yankee Pride?
Nothing. I have spent many hours remembering his last words to me. He spoke only of one new thing. A woman. With Fosun, there was always new woman. With this one, he was filled with pride and excitement. She was Malayan. Perhaps she brought him death.
The man that threatened you, did he ask you about her?
He asked me everything that had been talked of, but I was frightened and did not mention her.
Do you know her name or where I can find her?
You will keep your secret?
I won't even mention that I've met you.
What will you say?
I'll lie about when I got here. I'll tell her I talked to your brother that night before he died.
Ah. Her name is Randi. There's a place of an Arab in Malabar Street. It is called Bili Paka. That is where he spoke of finding her.
All right. I'll see if I can.
Please. Korsun's death is a very heavy sorrow. But my death is in the future. Do not come back. To speak further of this would be to waste the future.
I won't come back, Mr. Cole. Thanks for the help you've given me.
Goodbye.
Hey, which one? You go other place now.
Yeah, I go other place. Malabar Street. Bili Paka. You know that?
I know that. Goodbye.
I didn't bother to go back. The crowd surging around the door I'd come out was enough to tell me what had happened. The future that Mr. Koo had been so anxious to protect had just ceased to exist.
In just a moment, we'll return to the second act of yours truly, Johnny Dollar, starring Edmund O'Brien. But first, are you ready to sing it again tonight? You'll find a whole hour full of the day's popular music sung by Eugenie Baird, Alan Dale, Bob Howard, and the Riddlers. You'll hear the tuneful riddle songs that lead to Sing It Again's Phantom Quest Treasure Trove, $5,000 in cash and $10,000 more in wonder prizes. Be listening again to Sing It Again tonight when it comes your way on most of these same CBS stations. The Phantom's a puzzler, but some CBS listener will win that $5,000 in cash. And now with our star, Edmund O'Brien, we return you to the second act of yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Telephones are still at a premium in the native quarters of Singapore. I wanted to report what had happened to Vintanelles and tell him where I was going and why. So I tried to find one, but couldn't. The joint called the Bili Paka was a mixture of nationalities, languages, and tobacco smoke. I spotted two Occidentals as I went in. They ignored me, so I ignored them and elbowed a place at the bar.
Hello, boss. What do you drink?
Any scotch?
Oh, yes, sir. Got good scotch.
No, I'll take one. Don't mix it. Hey, I'm looking for a girl named Randi. She here tonight?
Randi? You go table. She serve you, boss. You pay her.
Right.
Randi!
Randi! Hi, I'm Randi. You got a drink for me. Is all right?
I'm glad you did. Sit down.
Why did you ask for me?
Well, a friend told me about you.
You sound American, are you?
That's right.
I know some Americans.
Did one teach you to speak English and speak very well?
No. They do not teach me that. I learned from missionary school in Penang. You are surprised?
I didn't know it showed.
Everybody is surprised around. They went to school. Some American friend told you about me?
No, he was Chinese. His name was Koo Fo Soon.
Koo Fo Soon. He is no friend of mine. He spoke less. He told you about me?
A couple of afternoons ago. Said he was coming here to meet you.
He wanted to meet me, all right, but I did not want to meet him. He made fool of himself.
That would be easy.
What did he say about me?
Oh, that you were beautiful. that he was looking forward to seeing you.
He said that because he was lonely. I know about men. That's why you think of me tonight? Because you are lonely?
As a matter of fact, I am.
What is your name?
Dollar, Johnny Dollar.
You tease me.
I'll admit it has a ring to it.
No. I tease you. I know the name. In Penang, my father worked for a steamship line with that name. Are you in shipping business?
No relation. Shall we get rid of the scotch?
How do you say? Bottoms up. I think I like Cusco Soon better now.
What do you mean?
Because he told you about me. I get tired of these people. I like to talk to you.
Andy, you come back.
Oh, work. Will you wait for me?
Wait for you?
Only a little while. Then I stop work. You come to my house. We can talk some more. Please, you wait.
Randy, are you lying to me, or don't you really know that Khufu Soon is dead?
He is dead? I only knew him that one time. Not as well as I know you. How should I find out? Why should I lie to you?
Because the chances are that you're the last person to see him before he was killed.
How do you know that?
Because he was on his way to meet you, and he never came back.
There are many places to go in Singapore.
Yeah, but it all keeps returning to you or that place. Fusun's brother was shot right after he told me about you.
I did not know he had brother. Johnny, I do not want to talk to you like this.
I gave the name of the place to my rickshaw boy. Somebody overheard it. And the shooting took place right after we left. Why would somebody want to keep me away from you?
Nobody wants to keep you away from me. You are frightened?
Ah, that's past. If they wanted to kill me, they would have by now. Why did you bring me here?
I thought you understood. You are in trouble. Why don't you tell me? To listen to you, I would help you.
Forget it.
That would be better. I will help you forget, too. I'll make a drink. Pie. You like pie?
Sure, anything.
Do not think about your dead friends, John. You cannot help them now. You think of me.
What else?
Easy now. Easy. Sorry to interrupt. Hey, keep your pistol on him, Roy.
Right.
Well, I'll find out if he's got one.
He's not on.
Ah, well, you should know, dearie. Well, now, ain't you going to get up?
I don't see why I should.
Because we're going for a little drive, that's why you should. Are you coming like a gentleman or otherwise?
Roy! Yeah? Oh!
What do you make of this? You go to sleep in a river shack? You're not careful now. Stay on your feet. And you wake up on the threshold of a blasted mansion. Here, give me your hand, Roy. He can't hold his feet yet.
All right.
You know, you're an important man, Dollar. But don't get big-headed. There's them that's more important. Major, here we are.
I'm in the library. Come along.
Right you are. Go on, straight ahead.
Have you done to him?
he was quite violent, sir.
Here, help him to the chair. I'd hope this wouldn't happen, Mr. Dollar. Let me look at you.
Don't bother. You'll get a foot in the face if you get close enough. I promise you that.
Oh, I see. It's obvious that you fancy yourself a difficult man to deal with. But let me share a simple truth. You'll accomplish nothing here until I allow you to.
Those are strong words.
I have the power to support them. I know all about you, why you're here. My chief engineer will see that the Yankee Pride does not move until I give the word.
And when will that be?
When I am ready to leave for Mexico.
You're crazy. That ship isn't going to Mexico.
Oh, yes it is, Mr. Dollar. Because I have paid well for passage there.
You don't buy ship's articles. The Yankee Pride says she's going to San Francisco.
One can buy anything with sufficient funds. The simplest are the petty official signatures needed to make these changes. You'd be amazed at how easily eyes are blinded and ears deafened. You don't agree with me?
Up to a point.
I understand. You think that I brought you here for the purpose of bargaining with you? There's no need for that.
Why am I here?
Because I enjoy my power. And at the moment, I'm fighting you and your stumbling, idiotic method.
You're proud of your own? What kind of power did it take to bring off the murders of the Koo brothers? I'm not impressed.
You will be. I'm going to let you go on with your investigation because you're a harmless pipsqueak.
Thanks.
How much money will your company lose by further delay?
2% of $300,000 for each day over schedule.
Well, please convey to them my thanks and tell them I shall cover their loss. They won't attempt to prosecute. You may go. Earl and Roy would drive you wherever you wish them to.
I retreated to my hotel room. But I knew one thing about him and thought I knew something else. His name, as spotted on an envelope on the way out, seemed to be Major Ralph Dixon, and I had a strong feeling that his weakness was his strength and vice versa. The man was power mad. In spite of my exhaustion, frustration didn't let me sleep too well through the rest of the night.
Good morning, Mr. Ells here.
This is Dollar.
Well, I'm glad you phoned. I worried about what might happen to you last night.
Well, don't think for a minute that it didn't happen. What do you know about a Major Ralph Dixon?
Ralph Dixon?
Yeah.
Why, nothing. Who is he?
Well, he boasts that he's the man behind our trouble. He's crazy, and I really mean that.
Oh?
He claims that he's bribed everybody concerned with the Yankee Pride sailing, including port officials.
Mr. Dolly, you sound serious.
I believe him. Look, you have better entree here than I have. Would you see that you can learn something about the ship's papers being changed to include a Mexican port?
Oh, there was no Mexican port, I know that.
Well, he says there is. And see what you can learn about his visas and passport. And you might even check customs. He's holding the sailing up for something.
I say, what are you going to be doing?
Well, I'll start at the other end. I know my way around the bottom. Hello, Randy.
I did not run away, did I? I knew you would come back here.
You aren't afraid of me, but you will be. Right now, you're afraid of the Major, and I don't blame you. Two men were killed to keep you and the rest of us pawns afraid.
Yes, I'm afraid of him. Many people are.
You and one or two others are going to have to protect him by taking the blame for those two murders. You know that, don't you?
But there would be no trouble.
That was before I came to town. I say there is going to be trouble. Because I'm going to turn you in. And the Major is so powerful that nobody will believe you when you tell the truth. You'll pay for it all.
Yes. I believe that.
Well, don't you want to help yourself if you can?
Why? You know his power?
Not like you do, and I don't want to. I think he's crazy. And if I have to, I'll kill him.
What can I do?
Tell me what's behind it.
Gold. From an inland settlement who is afraid of invasion. They send their gold out when they can. The Major is making the arrangements.
How much do you know?
I've only heard. Almost 100 million.
American standard?
Yes, American. It's been delayed in its journey here. What can you do against power like that, Johnny?
If we can get high enough, we'll break them. The man I'm working with on this is checking every official the Major claims to have paid off.
How do you know that?
What do you mean by that?
You are speaking of Mr. Ayers?
That's right.
He is only a human being. He is as greedy as any of us. I do not think he's asking questions.
He's been bought, too.
Huh? Yes.
You, the captain, the engineer, officials, L.
You too, Johnny. If you were wise.
Did they tell you to say that?
It does not matter. Yes, they did. They told me to warn you.
I'm glad to hear that.
Why should you be glad?
Because it means he's afraid of me. What else were you supposed to tell me?
Only about Mr. Ells.
Yeah. Mr. Ells is as good a place to start as any. A check on the tri-state office told me that Ells had left the home, so I followed him there. It was a cottage set back from the street. No one answered my knock. Through the veranda window, I could see why. Vincent Ells was sprawled on the floor, a pistol just beyond his outstretched hand. On the way to Major Dixon's, I stopped at my hotel long enough to get an automatic out of my luggage.
What do you want?
What's the meaning of this?
I just left Vincent L's house.
Oh, yes. I've been advised that the poor man took his own life. Perhaps you can profit from his act.
I think I can. What happened? Did he turn on you?
Let us say that he didn't appreciate his position with me. He miscalculated my strength. He naturally learned there was nothing left for him to live for. How have you fared?
I've done all right. I've finally realized that there's only one way to stop you.
Oh? And, what is that?
To kill you. Have you thought of that?
See here, I'm a man of influence. You'd not be rewarded, you'd be prosecuted.
I think you're a man of influence only in your own mind. Your influence is due partially to money, but more to fear. Els turned on you and you killed him. The girl Rondi would if she weren't afraid.
Ah, but she is.
She wouldn't be if you were dead. I want you to come with me.
And where would we go?
Down to the police commissioner, where I want you to list every bribe and killing you've been involved in.
Ridiculous. I have an appointment at the club. You'll pardon me, I'm sure.
I know about the gold, Major.
Oh, you do, do you? What do you propose doing about it?
I'm going to stop it.
You?
Don't try to leave, Major. Major!
What? You fool. Stupid little fool.
I didn't kill him. As it turned out, I didn't have to. Police investigation of the shooting brought out all the truth. The gold was confiscated when it arrived, and after 3 days of questioning, I was released. Remarks? You may lose 2 days on the Yankee Pride schedule, but to balance that, you also lost Mr. Ells, an agent you can do without. Expense account item 4, $300, miscellaneous. Expense account item 5, same as item 2. Expense account total, $2,686. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, stars Edmund O'Brien in the title role and is written by Gil Dowd with music conducted by Alexander Courage. Edmund O'Brien may soon be seen in the Paramount Pictures production, Warpath. Featured in tonight's cast were Virginia Gregg, Bob Sweeney, Tudor Owen, Bill Johnstone, Wally Mayer, Jack Crucian, and Ben Wright. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, is produced and directed by Jaime Del Valle. This is Bob Stevenson inviting you to join us next week at this time when we'll again bring you Edmund O'Brien as...
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
There's Saturday Night Fun with the younger married set when Lucille Ball and her favorite husband come along later this evening on most of these same Columbia stations. Now stay tuned for Vaughn Monroe's Caravan, which follows immediately on most of these same CBS stations. This is CBS, where Hopalong Cassidy rides every Saturday night on the Columbia Broadcasting System.